You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hi, and thank you for joining us on the podcast for Save the Marriage today. This is Lee Baucom, and we're here to talk about ways you can save and improve your marriage. Now, last week we talked about the difference between a can't and a won't, and that led to a lot of comments, both by email and on the blog, that led me to think that maybe I need to clarify a few things and maybe add a few more thoughts. Because you see, after I said that and after all of the comments I got, I started thinking about how does can't work in my life? How has it worked in the past, and what do I do to get beyond it? And what I noticed is that as I was thinking about it, there really are four types of can'ts. And the reason I want to talk about these is because I hear so many times that people talk about how they can't do this and can't do that in a relationship, how they can't do this when the marriage is going wrong, and how this can't happen. And so I want to talk about that just a bit, but I also want to just kind of note the fact that part of what I want to focus on is how you might tell yourself you can't, or you might tell somebody else you can't, less about when you think about what your spouse is doing with can't. The reason I say that is because we had quite a few people on the blog post that were commenting, and what I noticed is they kept returning to what their spouse can't or won't do. In fact, they were quite clear that they felt like it was a place where their spouse wouldn't do something, not a couldn't do something. And this is a place where I want us to kind of back up a minute and reassess where we're coming from. See, I even had people who were saying, why are we even talking about this? This is about saving your marriage. How do I go save my marriage? Well, what I have tried to make clear through these podcasts is that there are three very significant steps and very different steps. They're interrelated steps on how you save your marriage. Now, one of them is about connection, how you connect with your spouse and how you work on the relationship. And we will talk some more about that. We've already talked some about that, and we'll talk more about that. But number two is how you change yourself, how you look at the ways that you need to grow and develop and become much more than you are now. And this is one of those places that falls into the second category. So when people say, well, what about the relationship? I want to say you're half of the relationship. You bring yourself into the relationship. And so we definitely want to address that. So that's why we're talking about these, the reasons why you can't when you say that to yourself. And so also wanted to just kind of remind you that what you have the capacity of focusing on is not what somebody else is doing, but what you are doing. You have no control over how your spouse is thinking, how your spouse is feeling, how your spouse is reacting and responding. You do have full control over how you choose to interact, how you choose to enter into that. And so that's why we want to talk about these can'ts, because can'ts are mental places for us. They're blocks. So let's talk about these four types of can't. Sometimes we say, I can't. And what we mean by that is it's not possible. So for instance, if I were to say, I can't sprout wings, right? I can't sprout wings. I can't change my racial makeup. I can't change the family I was born into. I can't change the weather. I can't change the rotation of the earth. I'm going to agree with all of those things. There are truly times when you say, I can't do this, and it's not a possibility. Here's the interesting thing. Let's go back to one of those. I can't change the family I was born into. That's correct. But you can go about finding ways of making sure the family you came from does not keep you in patterns that are useless to your development. In other words, you can learn about how your family impacted you, and you can learn how to set boundaries and how to create distance and how to create space in spite of whatever craziness might have happened in your family and in every family. And so in that way, you can't change the family you came from, but you can impact what happens because of that. You can change how that family molded you and created you. So there's a place where there's a can't, but there's a can behind it. Now, there are others that you can't do anything about. You can't do anything about the weather, but we usually don't talk about those things because those are common sense. You know, your spouse isn't going to say, hey, go make the sun shine. She knows that's not, or he knows that's not possible. So we're really talking about another three categories that are more in play. So if the first one is something's not possible, the second one is not yet. Sometimes we get in that place of saying not yet when you say, I can't do that. You know, I can't play this game means I can't play it yet. I don't know the rules. I don't know how to do it. I've got a friend who's a neurosurgeon, and I'm pretty sure that before he went to med school and did all the specialized training, he couldn't do brain surgery. In fact, I guarantee you. So that was a place he could have said before, as he was walking into med school the first day, you know, I can't do brain surgery yet. It's not that it's not possible. It's just that he can't do it yet because he doesn't have the skill set for it. So there's a not yet, and it applies even more to, for instance, in a marriage crisis, I can't connect with my spouse. Might be, I can't yet connect to my spouse. And that's an important distinction we have to carry with us, that I can't yet means that there's still possibility of something out there happening, some distant place where that could happen. You finding the ways to do it are important. So there's a not yet that sometimes is true about I can't. Related to not yet is I don't know how. I can't because I don't know how. So that'd be like the game. I can't because I don't know the rules. I can't because I don't have the information I need. I can't because. So the not yet could be a developmental piece, right? There are points in our life when there are new things that we're able to do. You can look at a child and say, okay, that child can't run. That child can't walk because they're crawling. But that's a not yet. But it's related to the fact they don't know how yet. They're not at a place where their body could even do that. So these two are very interrelated. But don't know how is a matter of saying, I'm going to go get the information I need. I'm going to go learn the skills of how to do that. Not yet may just mean I've got to keep doing what I'm doing to get beyond that. I can't connect with my spouse yet may mean that you have to keep working to do that. I can't keep myself in this position yet, right? For instance, if you're learning to exercise, maybe you don't have the flexibility yet. That's a not yet because you're moving towards it. And so there is a place of deciding that maybe it's something that just needs more time, more effort. There may be some places where you say, I've got to find new skills. I've got to gain the skill set that will let me do this. And then there's one final can't, and that's the one I really want us to kind of think about why that is. And that's the won't that I talked about last week. When I say I can't means I won't. And I hear it in lots of different ways, but one of them I often hear is the phrase, I can't forgive my spouse. I can't forgive myself. Both of those phrases are really I won't do those things. I choose not to, even though I don't even recognize it's a choice. That's what's behind it. Here's why. When people say, I can't forgive, they have misunderstood forgiveness, for example. They're fearful to forgive. They're fearful of letting go. They're fearful of turning it over to their spouse, and so they choose not to, not knowing that forgiveness is for you to not hold on to the pain. It's not for the other person, whoever harmed you. It's not for them to forgive. That's not why you do it. You do it so that you do not have to pull that around the rest of your life. And so that's one way that sometimes we get stuck in that won't. I won't do those things. Sometimes it's because we misunderstand them. Sometimes it's because we're afraid. We have fear that if we do something, right? If we make a move in a certain direction, it will be hurtful. It'll be scary. It'll put us in uncomfortable places. We have this discomfort about that. And that's an important thing to attend to. So when we say, I can't, what I'm suggesting you do is to go through the checklist and decide which one it truly is. Because that will tell you how you can address it. If it is, it's not possible, then you can set it aside. You can leave that alone just because it's not possible, and you can leave it to the side and just say, that's what I have to accept. If it's a not yet, then that's a matter of persevering, of continuing to push, of continuing to try, of continuing to put forth the effort to get there. If it's a I don't know how, that calls you to go find out how, to learn, to read, to study, to find someone who can teach you how to do that. If it's I won't, then you have to look at that and say, what keeps me stuck in that place? Why do I choose to stay in the I won't rather than moving to a different place? And that's my challenge to you. If you can boil it down and get rid of those first three, you're probably going to find the most crucial ones are the ones where you say, I won't. Now I have a choice. Am I going to continue to say, I won't? But at least I have to admit that it's just that, that I choose not to. Or am I going to go ahead and push through and decide I can and I will? Remember, last time I suggested that you ask the question, when you say I can't, that you ask yourself the question, why not? Because that will help you decide which of those four it might be. But a step beyond that is not just why not, but how can I? Changes it. If you ask yourself, how can I, and you truly cannot, being completely honest with yourself, come up with a way you can, you may be standing and looking at number one, it's not possible. How can I change the weather? Well, given my limitations, I can't. I mean, I know scientists are working even on that, but I can't do anything. So it's not possible for me to. How could I sprout wings out my back? It's not possible. So when I arrive at that, then I have to go on to the other ones, right? If I can't get to that and it's not possible, then it can only be one of three. Not yet have I been able to do it. I don't know how to do it, or the uncomfortable, I won't. So what does that mean if I stick with I won't? What if I need to move to a different place? Okay, so I hope that kind of clarifies what I was talking about last week when we were talking about the difference between I can't and I want. I hope it gives you a little more food for thought about how you can bring that in and use that to improve your life and certainly even in your marriage. And I want to just kind of leave you with that of asking, what kind of can't are you saying to yourself as we continue to ponder ways that you can change and how you can impact your marriage? Okay, so why is it so important for us to look at these thought processes? Why do I bring those up? The reason is this. We all have a worldview, a way of understanding the world, of looking out on the world, and that worldview is either helping us or hindering us. Years ago, the popular word was paradigm, and I love that word, but it got to be so overused that I often say worldview, how you look out and see your world. You see, we all have a tendency to play into a confirmation bias. That's the term that social psychologists use to describe this. Confirmation bias is simply the fact that we tend to look for evidence that confirms what we already believe, rather than finding evidence that challenges us to look at it in different ways. We all have it. We all have different ways of viewing the world, and there are lots of reasons why. Part of that is because of how we bring in information. Scientists, I was just reading an article a little while ago, scientists will tell us that we have a bombardment of our senses around, with the world around us. Scientists say that we perceive about 11 million impressions through our senses every second. 11 million pieces of information are being perceived by us every second of the day. Some of those come through as light rays, right? And they activate 125 million photoreceptors in our eye. So you've got huge amounts of information impacting huge numbers of nerves in our bodies. And yet, our conscious brain is only capable of dealing with about 40 pieces of information at a time. So 40 sensory impressions per second is all our brain can handle. And yet 11 million are coming at us. So consciously, we're processing 40 impressions out of 11 million perceptions. That tells you how much we're missing every single second of every single day that may run counter to our beliefs already. Notice that, 40 pieces of information out of 11 million. That means that we are wasting somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,999,960 pieces of information. So out of 11 million, almost 11 million are missed by us. And yet we're continuing to look at the world as if it's a whole. Now what that means is there are 7 billion people, give or take, in the world. So there is not one reality of the world. There are 7 billion realities to the world. We all see things differently, slightly differently from different angles. It's because of all that information that's coming at us. It's also because of the way we were raised and the education we have and the gender we are and the culture we're in and lots and lots and lots of other pieces. When we were born, where we were born, how we were born, our siblings, our parents, our friends, our schooling, all of those things create different parts. That then when joined together, we create a worldview, a way of looking out at the world. Now, that's the given. The question is, what do you do about that? Because that worldview that we've talked about, it is either helping or hindering you. And I want you to just step back and realize that there are places that you're missing information. We don't have to note all of the places you're missing information, but we need to acknowledge that there's always information that we're missing, that there are always things we're not seeing. When's the last time that you maybe were doing something and missed something else while you were doing it? I'll tell you an example that often happens. We all drive down the street based on how we expect the other drivers to act. We all expect to see a way a driver is going to be. And so that's why a lot of accidents occur. It's not that we weren't noticing something odd. It was that we were expecting something else. Let me go a step further. Have you ever been sitting, getting ready to make a turn in your car, and you've looked to the left or right, and you totally did not see a car coming one way or the other? Or let's take it even more frequently, where you look to the left, to the right, you don't see a car, and you don't notice that a motorcycle, a bike, a dog, something is coming your way because you were expecting to be looking for the car. Or maybe you've seen the video that made it around on YouTube, where scientists asked people to count how many times a ball was passed between a group of people. And so as they're sitting there counting the number of times that ball is being passed back and forth, someone in a gorilla suit runs into the middle of the group, beats their chest, makes very obvious movements that are captured on film for everybody to see, runs off the stage, and the important thing is, somewhere in the neighborhood of half the people did not see the gorilla. They did not notice it because they were attending to something else. So again, you may be asking, what does this have to do with saving your marriage? It's this. We look for ways that we understand and expect our spouse to act. And when they act a certain way, we put them in a category because we think it relates to something else, even if it doesn't. Even if what they're doing is different, we will read it through that. So let's say that a spouse has been dishonest in the past. Then they're completely honest. Completely honest. We still may choose to look for evidence that they are dishonest. Why? Because that's what we expect, and so we keep them in a stuck spot. We're not open to the new possibilities for our spouse or for ourselves that something else is coming our way. And so that's that confirmation bias I talked about, where we're looking for the evidence to prove what we already believe. What's important about this is being willing to see the possibility that there's something new, both in yourself and in your spouse. Because we also have another little trick that we play on those around us. we have this little trick on how we think about whether somebody is making a mistake or if something is wrong with them. The attribution error is always in play. Attribution error is this. If you do something wrong, it's a fatal flaw in your personality. If I do something wrong, it's just a mistake I made. So often I hear from people who will be glad to talk about how their spouse is so stuck in a pattern. But when they apply it to themselves, it's not that they are stuck in a pattern. It's that they are reacting to their crazy spouse. Or they just flubbed up that time. They just made a mistake. It was an accident. They didn't mean to lie. They didn't mean to be dishonest. That just happened. The spouse does it, and it's clear that their spouse is completely dishonest, has always been dishonest, and will always be dishonest. Notice how we shift between ourselves and the other person on what we decide about those things. So there's both how we're taking in information that's important and how we're viewing other people as compared to ourselves. All of those pieces fit into an understanding of our worldview. And it's important to attend to the worldview because that worldview is part of what keeps us stuck and what keeps our spouse stuck. And all I'm trying to raise is the possibility that there's more to each of you than you see right off the bat, and there's more possibility in the relationship and in each of you than you might see otherwise. Okay, so now it's your turn. It's my chance to listen back to you, for you to find ways of letting us know what's helpful here. So I want to tell you how you can help us help you. First is, if you have subscribed to this podcast and you're listening by iTunes or Stitcher or one of the other podcast programs, then you might want to go over to the blog. That you can get there by going to the SaveTheMarriageBlog.com, SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. If you go to SaveTheMarriageBlog.com, you'll find the blog that holds this podcast, and you can leave us a comment. And that comment, I read every single one of them and often respond to them if it needs a response. But it's also a place that you can leave ideas, not just responses to this, but also ideas on what you would like to hear in this podcast. You can also get to us just by emailing podcast@SaveTheMarriage.com. That's podcast@SaveTheMarriage.com. Now, I want to be clear. That's not how you get information to me that you want an answer to. You have some question about your relationship. That's not what that's about. You can find help through my staff. You can come through the Save the Marriage website and get to me or my staff and find some answers. This is simply a way for you to say, hey, I would love to hear about this on your podcast. So again, that email is podcast@SaveTheMarriage.com. You can give me some questions that you want answered on this or some statements about what you think about what you're hearing. I'd be happy to hear about that. And you can also leave a voicemail for us. That number is 4, the number 4, HELP, 44132. 4HELP, 44132. Or if you don't want to look up the letters, it's 443-574-4132. That's 443-574-4132. That will let you leave a voicemail. And that voicemail gives us a way of listening to what you have to say, how you would like this podcast to go, responses you might have to the podcast, and gives us a way of listening in, getting a pulse for where you want to be. So let us know. Let us hear from you so we'll know how we can improve this, what we can add, questions that you might want addressed in future shows. And what I would ask is that you just stay tuned. Let us continue to help save your marriage. I wish you the best. This is Lee Balcom. We're hanging in there with you. Hang in there with us. I wish you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.